Is that the third time?
Yes, it is.
Then it should remain again. Carol, how do you feel when you look at it? Yeah, what Dan picked up as a conscious decision are really those levels being operative. The work open enough to let them operate, let them occur.
That lover is looking
not like it. Yeah, oh yes, everybody. Thanks.
He's been out with me.
Well, it's a lesson for me because it's difficult for me to take, you know, I mean, this raw work piece of clay and have it organized. It's a lesson for me so that I'm somewhat uncomfortable with it because the idea of, you know, I kind of like the raw mishmash of energy, unstructured, and to see it personified is one thing, but to see it, you know, to see a leader being, chosen and some to have ears,
You doubted his ability to become a leader?
But it's just, it's hard for me. I'm thankful for all of your comments. It's just, it's not that I don't like it. It's just that I'm happy that, that this uncomfortable feeling is coming out, and it's something that I have to
practice and work.
Think about it myself. I don't know if I'd want to be part of that group right now. I'd probably be over in the corner. Thank you.
The pie tin is not any part of it. The pie tin is gone.
Oh, yes.
I was just trying to see maybe under those mounds, perhaps.
No, I made little cardboard wedges to prop them up.
Oh, okay. Chris, how do you feel?
Well, I'm just trying to reflect on the transition from what three people have said.
Okay.
And the torture for the first two had it just a bit. And the joy for the person to have it either.
You're not trying to balance their torture with her joy.
I didn't.
This is a utilitarian
I
here.
I didn't have a chance to look at it closely before Christina explained how she was doing the different features on that piece. I think that was quite interesting. I wish the little rebel, the little kid part was still there somehow.
And it's certainly not McDonald's for the lunch. Well, that's excellent. Let's move to the fountain. Let's move to the fountain.
What's a toshi snakes and fountain? Explored the possibility that the snakes within themselves, although they're negative cultural symbols, could be a path in themselves. And as they joined together and moved out, they could solidify in something solid to stand on and solid path. And then as I opened up the cup, it then became this fountain of youth. And I mowed the grass, the planted grass, it was like a brown ground.
Is that hand mowed grass?
And then there's a little creature in the fountain taking a bath or getting a drink. Just sort of like opening up and out. It really came to a fruition for me as far as what was there. And then holding the idea of the cup, the expansion, the container as a plan for the path.
So, see, how do you see it?
I thought it was a bit of a negative
value. Negative social value.
That's what I was told about the repulse of the thing, but that was the feeling that I had. I was working with it. What can I do with this thing? Because you know, it's just really.
Where did you get this thing?
From Peter.
They were originally.
The thirsty snake.
Yeah, I'm the thirsty snake. And
I like
snakes. You do start understanding the thing. So I thought it was a good thing for me to.
I got a number and then
to make an exit. And that's why,
you dealt with the repulsive tone of the images by creating a exit threshold for them to return to nature. And then Robert picked up on that and made them a path, which is consonant with the value that you were working with. And then he developed the rest of this particular work out of that past aspect of the person. Now what's interesting is that Tina began, those were thirsty serpents. That was their whole nature. They weren't just serpents. They
wanted the water of life.
They wanted the water
That's
of life.
Fountain.
They were not repulsive or negative at all, but they were questers. The essence of the energy that's questioned. They were aspirant, an aspirant image.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me.
And look at the way in which the aspirant image comes out from Robert's third hand, as it were, removed once from you, and yet that fountain is very consistent with the original seed mm-hmm. that you had, not only in your mind, but in the very work itself.
In this case, the snakes have become the path. They were thirsty. They were. They drank of the fountain, and from then they can now be the path for someone else.
Yeah. How about some of you haven't said anything? Are you with us? Are you tired? Are you bored? Are you angry? Are you repulsed?
I'd like to say just something, the idea of, you spoke about before, of nature and our consciousness and the idea of paradise, of youth, and I see that, how the grass and now there's flowers there, it's been tended to the point where flowers can grow.
That's right.
And the fountain still has the capacity to hold water so that others can be nourished from it.
That's right. And that's interesting because, because of your affinity and background, you're able to pick out a very Persian motif in the ideation, which I must say, I think, frankly, was kind of subconscious before, and yet it's very accurately conscious. The paradise idea the Persian idea of nature made into a park. The excellent quintessence of nature being brought together and expressed as this landscape. Paradise is not so much of some place that's waiting for man, but man, by expressing it, makes it extant. The old Persian idea of paradise is that man has that work to do, even though he may not know that. Quite interesting. Well, let's move to the next one. That's the third time, so that remains, is it?
The one thing I wanted to mention, Mother, you didn't actually make this comment before you left last time.
Almost.
You didn't change the sound of suffering.
Oh, I added the third tier. I added the overflow, the sculpted, the scallop edges. Became a bit more symmetrical.
I haven't noticed before you left it, that the whole idea, in fact, the top fountain part you had even worked out.
I do think.
Let's move to Dolores' piece. Let's put yours up.
I don't want to move it. This is just a model. It isn't meant to be moved all over the place. But
what's the life-size dimensions of this book?
Well, it could be small because that's the way I received it. And after today's lecture, I'd like to read little parts from my journal that was supposed to be a secret. You know, I mean, you said it's for my information, but it affected me, and so I have to. I hope I'll try and cut it out a little because I want it. But this wasn't that easy for me. It looks very simple, but it's fuzzy. If I recall, I wasn't very happy when I found out I was number 6. And therefore Molly's broken lotus sculpture would be turned over to me. Did I misunderstand Roger? I thought I was finished when I finished my second sculpture. I even thought that maybe Roger changed his mind on the number of sculptures we had to do just to confuse and get reactions. And I was surprised at my reaction, especially after I got to my car after Saturday's class. I looked down at the sculpture and saw that it had crumbled even more. I kept thinking how busy I was, and now I've never get to other projects, and besides, I hated working on small sculptures. And I found these thoughts, I would say negative thoughts, became very strong. And when I got home, I quickly looked up more information on the lotus flower. It seemed that I too would be building a new structure from almost nothing. A lotus flower, so pure, rising from the black swan. Well, the next day, I had to get up very early, and I drove to Pebble Beach, and my husband was in another car, so I was all alone, and somehow these thoughts kept coming. I mean, why? I don't know.
On Highway 1?
Well, these 5, yeah.
Good time.
So I started thinking about the possibilities of the lotus flower and getting ideas, and then I realized, gosh, I'm so enthused. Why was I so upset when I got this flower, you know? And so then I started thinking, and because I love the challenge of the unknown. And so the truth was, I had been upset, just sort of flat, because I had been disappointed when I did not receive the answers I expected to get on my sculpture, which I had presented before I received Molly's sculpture. I thought, I suppose, this Chris, whose sculpture I had worked on, would see in my work what I wanted him to see. When he did not, my disappointment came out in my reaction when I received Molly's sculpture. I realized then that I certainly had been arrogant to expect someone else to know my thoughts. Since they'll put me on the pine tree. I didn't realize when I wrote this that it was so serious, you know?
You'll have to speak to God about that.
It was so strange to me that I Chinese. And yet, why did it bother me so much not to have Chris understand what my project meant? As I said, I thought, as Roger expressed it in the Thursday evening class on Pythagoras, that one deep self could automatically speak to another deep self. Anyway, after thinking about this for quite some time, I became very enthusiastic about beginning this new sculpture. But when I got home and started, disaster awaited me. The entire clay crumbled in my hands, and I must tell you, I tried to sell this clay. I put it in water. I mean, I got some, then I thought, well, maybe it was plastic clay, so I got something that you're supposed to squeeze on it and supposed to mold it. The more I tried, it just disappeared. So, anyway, I thought, I don't have to stick with the idea of a lotus flower now. I mean, the structure's done, I can do anything I want. But no, a little voice said, I felt that I should see where the idea of Molly's lotus flower would take me.
Molly's happy about that.
Oh, good. I knew that I probably wouldn't have chosen this symbol on my own, because, as I said before, I don't like working small, but I would try. At first, I thought I'd have a large flat surface shaped into a circle, and I'd have dozens of lotus flowers with cobras peering up. My idea soon changed after I started working on the first flower. I wanted to have a flower opening. Every time I tried to mold a petal, the entire petal collapsed. Thank goodness, I must have realized this would happen intuitively when I purchased a new clay. I had bought different sizes of wire, very thin. So I ended up making miniature skeleton petals out of wire and then molding clay over them. I had to figure out how to keep my snake hovering over the flower. I wanted a graphic snake, not a realistic one. As I made my first flower, I knew that I would not be able to make a dozen flowers. I kept looking all over my house for some other ideas, and I found a hexagon shape in my basement, and I knew it was perfect for what I wanted to say. The theme of flower and snake, the duality of manifestation. I must confess that when I was making the wire petals late into the night, the thoughts that came into my mind were, I just can't spend this kind of time on these projects. What does it all mean anyway? I can't get these darn petals to stay up. Why do I even have to finish this? I'll just say it couldn't be work done because Molly's sculpture base crumbled. I'll just stop when the class light goes on, no one will notice, et cetera, et cetera. However, when I finally finished this little sculpture, it of course, you know, needs improving because I left things undone. I was so delighted. I don't quite understand, you know, everything that happened, but I thank Molly for the idea of the lotus flower.
Oh,
okay. So that was it.
How do you see it, Molly, from where you are? It's really quite graphic.
It's just beautiful. As I told you last week, I'm very impressed with her artistic talent.
Indeed.
Thank
you very much. Turn this 90 degrees.
Oh, one thing too, when I was working on it, I really didn't count petals and numbers. And I just kept adding, and then when I was almost through, it seemed incomplete, so I added four little buds that were about to bloom. The little thing you mentioned was the seed of the pretty white lotus flower.
Can you hold that little thing up? Maybe some people can't see it. What she's speaking of now.
And then it's strange because I thought, oh, what the heck, I'll count all the petals. And so I counted the petals, and they turned out to be number 20, and I looked it up in some of the book, and it said that represents the whole man. So it sort of just tied in the duality of man, soul, and then the petals. When they finally come up, it will be 20. And I wasn't thinking about that when I did it.
What kind of snake?
Oh, the snake is the, when you put the lotus blocks and the flower with different animals, it means different things. And the black cobra intrigued me because I didn't put fangs on him because he's just a presence there. It means your duality of your soul, and it's always covering over the blocks and lotus blocks.
This is the second working of it?
Yeah. You're the first. Somebody could take that too if they wanted.
All right, it needs to go to someone yet again. You get to choose to whom does it go. Are you
Carol.
Eyeing Chris?
I was Carol.
Oh, okay.
I have one that is not.
Okay, well, but Carol, you inherit this now, all right? Okay, and bring it next week.
I have another one.
Okay, well, bring two.
That's
no, no, that's fine. She's well able. Okay, we have one more there on the table. Oh, we have Walter's also. Well, let's do the next one there on the table. Thank you, John. John, could you hold up the little piece there on the sculpture, as Chris has held up the other little piece? Yeah. Yeah, just so everyone can understand that, as in Dolores's, there was a little piece, also in Chris's, there is a little piece that belongs with the work, is a part of the work. Okay. Thanks, John. Yes.
I'd like Molly to talk
first. I know you would. Please continue.
Well, I'm very sorry that Linda's not here because I guess as now that it's finished, and I think it's, I'm pleased with it, but it lost all the fun characteristics that Linda had. And the snake was really a fun snake that has now become the companion force underneath the plant. We started out with the ground, which is the ball, was the snake. And then the snake became the earth, the Molly had it, and now those dark forces have been contained in the spherical shape. And that's the source of power from which the plane comes. And my first problem with this was having to do it at all because I didn't know. I'm so busy and I'm trying to do so many things. And I was concerned when Molly gave it to me what I was going to be able to do with it because the play is not easy for me. I let it sit all week and I really didn't do too much. I took the play apart Thursday night, and then most of this happened about 2 hours last night. But the first half was take three colors of clay apart because I knew I couldn't work with the form as well. So I had to separate out the red clay from the green clay from the brown clay. And the little piece are those portions of clay that couldn't be separated from each other. And they're all bound up together, and there's no way you can separate them.
They demanded to be left alone.
No, that was something that could not be unwound. It was the ultimate problem.
There was no demand.
No what?
There was no demand on your part.
No, I wanted to take it apart, but I couldn't. So there's some things you can't take apart, and so you have to just accept that and set it aside, but you can't throw it away. Because then you lose something. So you have to realize that that quantity you can't take apart stays. So I got the things apart, and for some reason I just started making the ball, and then I realized how hard it was to make a ball, and using this sphere. And then I wanted to have the green become an intermediate layer to the red portion on top. The red portion on top is an idealized flame, which is not easy to make, I found out. I didn't want to try to make it too perfect, and it's not. It also could be a red feather, if you want to go to the human side, it could be the fire of love or it could be the tickle of humor.
Could you say that once again? What's the alternative? The fire of love or
the tickle of humor.
The tickle of humor.
The other thing, I felt like I needed to put a plane of consciousness between the source and the plane, and that's the easiest level to begin. That's where we start getting in trouble, is to find that one. And that's the silver one, and I wanted to warp it and shape it. And then I had to set it on a pedestal of some kind, and I must thank Arthur Clarke and Space Odyssey 2001 contributed to this, because somehow the shaft that the ball is sitting on is somewhat like the icons that the gorillas found, or the apes found, and they started worshiping it and got all these minimal effects from it and didn't quite know what to do with it. And then the screen in the back, or the other matrix, cycloid web, whatever you want to call it, from the larger dimension, and it really has a lot of religious symbolism, because it reminds me of elements in two or three of my favorite churches. When I was a boy, St. Augustine's Episcopal Church in Santa Monica has a beautiful stained glass window in the back that goes from the floor all the way up with all these changing colors. And you can almost imagine changing all the time, even though it's fixed. And that golden screen that things come to us, it's always changing. It also reminds me of the height and about the width of a very large, beautiful red grape that comes behind the altar and grapes over in the church and covers everyone out of the door. Gorgeous, beautiful, crimson red thing that must have been 35, 40 feet high. And then it looked too much like a phallic symbol when I got done. And I was a little embarrassed about that. It seemed well over the children. And, so I had some extra material left over from when I poured the shaft or the pedestal, and I had just taken one of my opening box lids and filled it up. And I said, well, I'll use it for another project later.
He's the oatmeal artist for many years.
So I got the box for it.
These private illusions are not quite so private.
But I said, I don't want to waste anything. And so then I had to bring it back into the project because there wasn't enough consciousness in it the way it was, even with the layers between all these things. And so to me, the disc laying up against the thing sort of breaks any other regressive or old type of illusions you might have had about this thing. It's sort of Salvador Dali type.
Is that a general we or a personal we?
We. Well, part of this relates to a painting I'm working on.
Yes, that's true, but is that we general or personal?
Oh, I think it can be both.
In this case.
Well, I don't know, everybody would have to answer that for themselves.
That's right. That's right, and that's why it's weighted towards the personal. It's interesting because the form, this particular form, is radically different from any other sculptural form you've ever worked with. Your normal form is patterned after the oatmeal box. For many years, I've seen this. But this freedom of expression and the screen motif and everything is actually appropriated by you from the struggle with Dolores' original piece. The aesthetic struggle that you have with Dolores' original piece, the term is endomorphosis, you by endomorphic acceptance were able to bring qualities of Dolores' aesthetic into your own and work with it as if it were your own, and indeed it has become your own. This is quite expressive of yourself. But there are a lot of personal elements of Dolores in that particular work.
That's a Marie Calder's python.
This is
as I was making it, I said, well, this would be good.
Yeah,
please, please.
When I came to the room, I saw Dolores' snake, and I was very interested in your work because I loved it. I never thought that what that was not Dolores' flower. I thought it was.
Oh.
And that you had, I didn't know that it crumbled and all that you said. So that is very interesting because you were able to really conserve or keep her there, you know, in your own work. But I thought that that was a snake too. So that's interesting. I thought it was a snake coming out from like a type of exposed place, you know, like the the cave of the snake was exposed. I didn't interpret that as a flame. So I was really surprised when you said a flame. Now I see it as a flame. And I thought, how could I think that as a snake?
Well, the tongue of a snake.
Yes, that's
the tongue.
Yeah, I thought.
Sure.
Like Pentecostal tongues of fire.
Yeah.
And the working with the jewelry and sculpting, making jewelry. The you use a screen, you know, and to do your soldering on, and that's like the altar. The way you have the kind of, you know, the movement that kind of altar base between the earth and the flame, and too. That's, you know, where the work is done. Is the, you know, on the technology here. Okay.
One of the other things I found is I'm doing more of these things now is I want to make them so that they'll last. And because I put so much effort into them that I don't want to crash them. And in fact, I took the Lord's home and put it in a glass case in my dining room, and I'm going to take this one. But, and
this is the third time that this has been worked on, too. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that does go to you. Mm-hmm. Can you all follow the way in which no values are lost? The personal values are not lost. They may not be conserved in the expressive way that they were before, but the values are not lost. Now, that is quite radically different from mythic values that can be lost. Mythic values can be lost. Personal values cannot be lost. Their traces are still there, and with an appropriate expressive circumstance, all of those values come back out again. They are never lost. They may be hidden, but they are never lost. Whereas mythic values can be lost. Personal values are never lost. Make it stronger. It's a religious statement. Once achieved, the person is never thrown away. Those values always are there. They enrich the cosmos. It's a realization that is essential. Why can we not be just satisfied with the natural ecology and just end with the deep self? This is why. Persons and personal values are a part of the ongoing materia of the universe. What we do and what we are stays. And not just in some idea of a karmic occurrence, but in this broader, more exfoliated sense of value. Notice how precious the person is, and every person is, because whatever values they engender remain. They become part of the eternal universe. is very important to be conscious of that and the value. Now we have another one from Walter.
I want Molly to talk about it before
you. You want Molly to talk about it? You recognized in Linda some aspects of yourself
of
4 years
yes.
ago, yeah.
Longer than that.
Or more than that, even, yeah.
Yeah. But I appreciate this work very much. I see it as an altar. And a family altar. And a family altar. But
she sees it as a candle on an altar, which is to say, symbolically, a light upon a focus. And when you put it in that kind of a metaphorical language, you can see how profound what Molly is experiencing is, though at the moment she's not putting much emphasis on it. You can see that that is a real ability to attenuate herself to this object in terms of its own valuation.
What I had, what Molly's dish was, Molly's dish was not about me. What she had prepared was a sacred vessel for the preparation of the Eucharist, or the preparation of the Spirit. And that's what made it so difficult for me.
A challenge.
It was a chalice, it was not a fountain, and that's really a hard thing to put on.
The ambiguity between the chalice as a crucible and the crucible as a fountain is one of the major themes in alchemy. As long as it's a chalice, one has difficulty in recognizing the fact that the crucible and the fountain are very close, almost ambiguous in their usage sometimes. It occurs a lot in alchemy. But it's sublimated generally in the iconography of 17th century alchemy. Late 16th and early 17th century alchemy, it's usually sublimated to the figure of a naked woman, a nude woman, who in her body is a crucible, but usually there is some kind of a fluid coming from the breast, the fountain motif. And because of that sublimated iconography, the actual ambiguity is hidden, rather than made more conspicuous, is hidden even more. Because the interpretive scheme then is one sees the nude woman in the alchemical thing and brings in sexual imagery, and it's not that at all. It's on an even deeper level. It's on the level that, for instance, Molly can just in a very natural way now say, she sees a candle on an altar. And if you can translate that, amplify that resonance out, you understand this is very true of this particular work. That a candle with its flame is also a serpent with its tongue is no difficulty for the symbolically alert. at all. That's no difficulty at all. And that the light cast by such a candle at such an altar should be the voice of the snake, there's no problem either. But when you get to that level of expressive fineness, you can see what we talked about this morning. You can see the protean freedom of God, not limited at all by anybody's favorite motifs. Everyone's favorite motifs, as many as you want, are all admissible. They're all welcome. You can see that that, as a basis of, for instance, the ethical stance of toleration of religions, is very, very deep. It's not a sociological agreement to be tolerant. It's a deep symbolical understanding that toleration is the very essence of it all. It couldn't be any other way and be real. Let's bring in Walders. I don't want to keep us too long, but I do want Walders to be brought up.
It's interesting. A month ago, I would have been willing to paint the colors on that, but those colors are built into it again. So they're all the way through.
Sorry to keep you so late.
This is an incomplete thing. When I first received it, I made an effort in order to forget everything I heard about the form, and then I had it on the floor of the living room for a week in order to see if I get some kind of a feel of, you know, what I ought to do with it. And with the ethereal nature that it ended up with, the only thing I was able to see was to break up the form. And as I started trying to cut into the cylinder, I discovered that it was a hollow, it had a hollow core to it. I was going to make a pyramid out of the cylindrical form. I was going to cut it up into about 100 little itty bitty pieces and put them all together in the form of a pyramid, but that didn't get to work out, so I sewed it up into parts and I reconstituted the form. The other cylindrical piece, I was aware of, was hollow, so I added on to it. And you know, the free-form wall that was there, I decided, you know, to make into the bridge or a threshold. I was going to make a number of Burma-shaped to go along with it, to act as a synthesizing factor.
This is the Brooklyn element, right?
But I didn't have time to do it, and that's the reason why it's an incomplete form. It's incomplete to me.
It's a carnival landscape without the Burma shape sign.
Right.
Let me just go to Dolores just for a second, because I'm interested in how you feel at this particular moment. What's going to go in that diary? I mean, this is this is an extraordinary revelation.
Isn't it? yes, the whole thing was evolution. I mean, my statement was evolution from raw material textures. I chose Walter because I was almost going to give it back to Chris, you know, but I said no because I had only seen Walter be very small for me, and I thought my thing is so big and broad. I wanted him to, I felt, do something with it, you know, and I'm very pleased because this is life, I mean, this is evolution, and that's what I wanted. I think it's delightful. And the funny thing is, when Walter took it, I said, well, do you want this little mouse? Because I had just brought that in to show, you know, how easy it would have been to put it on the